This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
Comics of Black and White, and we are on our third Terry Moore episode. This is only the first one you and I have done, Jay. With me this week is Jay, recurring co-host. Pretty much you and Dennis are holding down co-host duties lately. I tried to set up some other ones, and certain somebody keeps on flaking. We're back here again with more Terry Moore. Before we get into what Terry Moore we're talking about today, what Terry Moore have you read before this?
I have read, and not all of it, I have not completed it. I've read some of Rachel Rising.
That's right, yeah, because you got the omnibus from that for me, Yep. Which fueled my purchase of Strangers in Paradise omnibus, Right. Which I have also hardly read. I read the first trade of Strangers in Paradise some time ago. I had actually the owner of my last comic shop was a big Terry Moore fan. And talked up Strangers in Paradise, so I had picked up the first collection on Comixology, so for like, I don't know, $3 or something. Can't go wrong.
Right.
And I liked it. You know, I was like, well, I'll check that out more later sometime when I feel like it.
I feel bad about not having read more Terry Moore, because he's a native Texan like myself. So he lives down in Houston, so shame on me for not knowing more about him and having read more of his stuff.
I just feel terrible about that. You know, I've read everything any Californian's ever written. Completely not true. But yeah, so Rachel Rising is what really hooked me just completely into Terry Moore. And I got Rachel Rising also on Comixology. They had a sale on the entire collection. It was like $30 for the whole collection on Comixology. And I picked that up. It was one of those things I had seen the covers for it over and over, and it kept on catching my eye. There's something about Terry Moore's art, and he's my friend. I actually don't know if he's your friend. Aaron from the Nerdy Legion podcasting network, Aaron Bell, hates Terry Moore, absolutely hates Terry Moore. And it just really shows how Aaron has no taste in anything. But
I only know him very casually, just mostly from stuff on the Slack channel or in Facebook, so...
Yeah, Karen's a good guy, but he has no taste and he's full of hate. So, but I digress. But yeah, there's just something about Terry Moore's artwork that he draws in a way that is simple, but makes there be so much more substance there in a way. And he draws women in a way that is not like overly sexualizing them. Or anything like he draws them like normal people, but it makes them more alluring because they're normal people. It makes you feel more drawn to them. So like I know reading Rachel Rising, there's a lot of characters in there that I feel like you get drawn to them quicker because they're not the stereotypical female in comics that is way overly sexualized. So you don't really feel like there's not a connection. I mean. You go back to the era of comics where women were, especially like the 90s where everything was really over-sexualized.
Right.
It wasn't because you wanted to connect with the women, it's because you wanted to do something else with women in the comics. And that's definitely not what Terry Moore is going for. Before we get into this actual comic book, one more Terry Moore comment. I saw this on Twitter. If you don't follow Terry Moore on Twitter, if you like his comics at all, you should, because he doesn't post a ton. Usually when he does, it's interesting enough to be worth seeing. But he had posted a piece of art for Motor Girl, and it was in the fourth issue, where it shows her, she's standing in front of a mirror, and she has her shirt more or less off. I forget if she's like pulling it up or if it's just completely off, but it shows all the scars on her back.
Right.
Because she's a veteran. And, and we know a little bit of the details about what happened to her, but not very much yet. But so it's showing that, but I mean, so she's topless, but it's not showing anything. And somebody responded to the tweet basically asking if they could see the other side. And Terry Moore basically said that will almost certainly never happen.
Right.
There'd have to be a very good reason to show like blatant nudity. and it's not going to happen just to show it. And I really appreciated that with Terry Moore. Not that there's anything necessarily wrong with nudity in art, but I don't know, especially the way the guy was asking. It's like, no, you're not just going to get to see her tits. So.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously he was being, you know, silly about it, and probably was facetious in his comment. Wasn't really expecting that, but I do appreciate what Terry said. And yeah, you're right. He does, you know, kind of follow up on what you're saying. Oddly enough, he's written a book. It's an instruction book. He's written several instruction books on drawing comics, and one of them is called How to Draw Women, which I've been meaning to get as soon as I can afford it, because I'd like to see what his take is, because it is, you're right, he does draw women not in a, you know, the stereotypical, you know, buxom, overly sexualized way that you see in a lot of comics.
Yeah, exactly. They're not sexless, but they're not overly sexed up either. You know, I mean, they're just they're like normal people. You know, there's a balance in there. So I really like Terry Moore's art. I'm sure we'll touch on it some as we dive into Motor Girl, the ongoing Terry Moore series, which we're doing this. 5 issues are out, which is halfway through the run of this title, which is going to run for 10 issues. And then from what I've been hearing, Strangers in Paradise is going to be his next project. It's making a comeback after this.
That's what I've heard. It's not going to be a long series, but he is going to he is going to return to Strangers in Paradise at some point.
Yeah. He has plenty of Strangers in Paradise already in the books. Like I said, I got the omnibus thanks to you buying the Rachel Rising omnibus for me. And the Strangers in Paradise omnibus is over 1,000 pages and two big volumes in a slipcase. Quite a bit of book. I'm looking forward to diving into that. So since we're getting to that, like what he's doing next, one of the interesting things about Motor Girl is that this was in the works for a long time. He was talking about doing this. He was thinking about doing this, as he said, after Strangers in Paradise. You brought this up to me. So what happened?
He's very cryptic about it. I mean, he doesn't say exactly what happened, but he indicated that was his plan. And then I think the way he phrased it in one place was the universe demanded that Echo be done next. Which was what he did.
Yeah.
After that, and then after Echo, he did Strangers in Paradise, and so it's been, you know, several years since he's had the idea, originally had the idea for Motor Girl, that's just gotten pushed back. And you know, I don't know the exact reason he did. Like I said, I haven't read anything specific on why he did that, other than just probably his creative impulses.
That was his. I loved his statement on that. Was he did Strangers in Paradise, and then he said it was something to what you said, that the universe demanded that Echo was next, and then after that he ended up doing Rachel Rising,
right?
And then I don't even know when Rachel Rising ended, but that was the last thing that he did before Motor Girl,
right?
Now, apparently, we're going back to some Strangers in Paradise. So now, when Motor Girl first started coming out, I just barely knew who Terry Moore was. I had read that first little bit of Strangers in Paradise. I might have bought the Rachel Rising on Comixology, but I doubt I had really started reading it yet. So I saw the first issue there, and I was like, eh, that looks, you know, I knew his name, so I checked it out, flipped through a little bit. I was like, this looks, you know, kind of lighthearted, and yeah, that was my first impression of it, without reading it, just kind of flipping through it. It's like you get these kind of cartoony aliens in it. It just looks like kind of a silly, lighthearted type of story. You have this, you know, anthropomorphized gorilla. Made me think a lot of, have you ever read Six Gun Gorilla?
No, I have not.
Six Gun Gorilla is by, I think it's Simon Spurrier. It was released by Boom. I think it was 6 issues. It's been a long time since I've read it, but it was a fun read, so that's one that I suggest to anybody looking to grab something kind of random. How can you not enjoy a comic book about a gorilla with 6 guns? I mean, really, there's...
Yeah, there's not enough apes in comics these days, period.
Especially not central or supporting character apes. Yeah, so that was my first impression just glancing at it, but then you start reading Motor Girl, and especially as you get deeper into the story, which we're only halfway through it right now, it definitely gets a lot a lot heavier. So what was your first impression of it?
A lot of the same reaction as yours. One of the interesting things about this, I think, is it does sort of toggle back and forth between some lighthearted, you know, even, you know, comical, funny things and, you know, some deeply serious stuff. I mean, this is, you know, Samantha, Sam, is a really, you know, damaged person. From her.
Yeah, I mean, we still don't really know the extent of the damage either. We just know that it's deep.
Well, she did three tours as a Marine, three tours of duty as a Marine, and was captured and spent some time in an Iraqi war camp, war prison, where I think it's where she got the scars on her back, and so it talks a little bit about that. So we know that she's definitely got some, you know, significant post-traumatic stress problems, I think, is a basis for a lot of what's, you know, what's motivating her in this story. But you start reading and it's kind of funny because it starts out and she's having this argument with Mike, her guerrilla companion, about we're at the beginning of the end of civilization, and it all has to do with that she saw a guy driving an F-250 pickup, which is a giant Ford pickup, while he's texting. And she's making some strange connection of how this is going to lead to driverless cars, which will be the end of civilization. It'll be the fall of our civilization. So you look at this and like, boy, this is really, it's humorous, but it's kind of strange in the beginning. It always, so yeah, it starts out in a lighthearted, kind of a funny way, but then we immediately, pretty quickly starts beginning to see, get into her character, because Libby shows up early on, and then there's a scene where in one panel it's showing Libby, Sam, and Mike, the gorilla, and then in the next he's not there. So you're getting to see that Mike is in Sam's head. This is not a actual character, physical character that's in the book. This is,
Yeah, exactly. Because going in, I mean, there's no reason to assume that it's not. I mean, it's a comic book,
Right.
I mean, he's on the cover of the first issue. If you know anything about Terry Moore, you know that it's not like he does, the stuff that he writes basically takes place in the real world.
Right.
Even if it's not, necessarily real world stuff all the time. This you go into it, and I mean, if you're just abandoning, reality like you do when you read a comic book, why wouldn't you assume that Mike was real? But then you see that he's not. You also see, so first of all, Libby is, she's an old lady, and she owns the land where this, like, junkyard that Sam works at is on. And Libby must be well off, because she's basically just keeping the junkyard for Sam, which we find out more of later. But you see Sam's, not only is she passionate about mechanical things, I think it's because it's something that she, like, not only does she have the ability to fix it, but it's something in the world that she has control over, which, you mentioned we see some of the damage that she's had in the past, and that, I mean, she's definitely suffering PTSD. It's easy to understand that if she's been through traumatic things, that having the feeling of control over something would be something important. At first you see kind of lighthearted, just like you said, it's just kind of a joke, like, texting is the end of the world, it's going to lead to this and this and this, and that's the worst thing that can happen. But, when you read into it, you see it's not just that she's passionate about mechanics, it's that she has a need for it. And that's why Libby's keeping the place, is she has a need for it, and coping with what she's coping with, that she dealt with, being a Marine. Libby also, incidentally, I believe it was Strangers in Paradise, they said, but she is from the greater Terry Moore, if you will, universe of comics already. So they kind of connected Motor Girl in with other things that exist. And if I'm wrong about it being Sip, then it's Rachel Rising, but I'm pretty sure it's Sip that Libby's in. And in the first issue, so as I said, I flipped through and it seemed pretty pretty lighthearted and kind of silly at first, because you get aliens show up, and not only are they aliens, they're very cartoony aliens. Sam helps them fix their spaceship. They're grateful for her. She gets an alien hug, and as they fly off, you see a couple little alien handprints that were copping a feel on her ass when they were giving her a hug. So it's, you know, a lot of humor in there, silly little things like that. So I mean, the first issue, even though you know some things may seem a little off kilter, it's just a lot of lighthearted in the first issue.
Yeah, I agree, and I thought the same thing about the aliens. They look very, you know, they come out and they're wearing these ill-fitting costumes and these helmets that look like they're just kind of smashed, and they look like something out of a comic strip, like a Bloom County or something that you'd see.
Yeah, I think it was the Jetsons that it made me think of.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that, but I can see that. So yeah, and that kind of getting into the art a little bit. I like the way he varies his styles in here, because there's some of the renderings, especially of Samantha, and you know, very. I don't want to say realistic, but I mean they're very grounded in, you know, what people look like, and not a very loose cartoon comic strip type of art. But then he has this in there too, so he's kind of mixing different styles throughout, which I thought, you know, was an interesting choice, and it really shows his diverse talents as an artist.
Yeah, and I think you utilizing that too kind of keeps you off kilter in this book, where, I mean, we're halfway through it and you get the overlying threads of what's going on, but you still just feel off kilter with a lot of stuff, because you know that there's more than what meets the eye with everything. So in the fifth issue, okay, let's not get ahead of ourselves. We're not always going to break down issue by issue by any means, we'll just kind of rattle through what happens in the issues to give the structure of the overall picture. So we meet Sam, we see the junkyard, we meet the gorilla, we realize that he's not really there. We meet the aliens. We're not 100% sure if they're really there or not, because they do kind of try to trick us back and forth on that. But as it goes on, you realize, yes, they're there. They're real. Pretty quickly, we get a couple of goons that are coming. They make an offer to Libby for the land, quite a hefty offer, and Libby won't sell because she knows what it means to Sam. So that's where I was saying Libby must be pretty well off. Is, I mean, if you could just be like, no, I'm not going to take a ton of money because she needs this place more than she needs anything else.
She's also suspicious of their motives, because this is a junkyard, a wrecking yard in the desert in Nevada. I mean, it has no really real value, and they're making her this, you know, exorbitant offer, and so she smells a rat immediately. You know, like, what's going on here? And I think at one point she's even says if they're going to open a casino, then she wants 10%. You know, she wants a better.
Yeah, deal. Exactly.
So she knows this means a lot to Sam. And she won't sell unless Sam gives her the go-ahead. But she's onto these guys. You know, there's something, you know, not a little bit underhanded going on here.
Yeah, so these two guys also were big characters in the book. Vic and Lou, is that the correct names?
Vic and Larry.
So yeah, that's like three quarters right there. So Vic and Larry. Vic is the big guy. Larry is the little guy. You know, they start off presenting them as pretty legit thugs, but as it goes on, you discover that they're not really that legit of thugs. I believe, if I remember correctly, they said this was their first job, basically.
Yeah, they're just kind of work for hire guys, but they're just really inexperienced and kind of incompetent.
Yeah, so they're pretty hilarious. They come and try to threaten Sam. After the offer gets turned down, they try to kidnap her. That's pretty foolish, seeing as she's a Marine with the ability to survive three tours and being a prisoner of war. So it's all pretty funny. They just fail in all of their attempts. Larry gets abducted by the aliens. Vic is sad. I believe Larry's his brother-in-law.
I think so, or future brother-in-law, something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
I believe so future brother-in-law.
Yeah, it's all pretty funny. But so they fail in their attempts. And then the big boss shows up, the guy who's trying to purchase the land. And he's the one that makes it really clear the severity of what Sam is going through. And not only the trauma she suffered, but he makes it clear that she has a condition that's threatening her life.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've already seen by this point that she's you know, blacking out from time to time and having massive headaches and stuff like that. So that this is definitely where it gets a lot heavier is in the fifth issue, where we're really confronted with what's the, you know, the hardcore stuff that she's dealing with.
Right. Yeah, somehow through his connections, he gets access to her military records, her medical records from the military, and finds out all of what's going on. And yeah, she's got some type of brain tumor. We don't know specifically what type, or if it's malignant or benign, but it's probably the source of those headaches and maybe some of her I don't want to call them delusions, but outright, but, you know, some of the things that she sees, like Mike, who's really, you know, we see Mike has been, and it's revealed in a couple panels where it shows her back in the hospital after her tour of duty, but before she came out to the junkyard, he's with her. So he's been her companion through all of this, through her time, you know, being in an Iraqi prisoner of war camp. You know, and she even says that a couple times when somebody says, I think the doctor she goes to that Libby sets her up with makes a comment about, well, you've had a lot to go through alone. And she says, well, I've never been alone.
Mm-hmm.
It's obviously she's referring to Mike, you know, the gorilla in her imagination. He has been the one constant throughout all of this, the thing that she clings to. Which is very, you know, it takes the humor out of that kind of relationship that we saw early on, and it makes it, you know, very serious and very and touching in a way.
Yeah. I think that's kind of the point that we're at in it too, is we're being met with so much reality of this stuff that, like, up till now has kind of set up the humor. So now you have, you know, you feel connected to the character. You know, you want to see her be able to have happiness, and you just kind of, then you're abruptly confronted with what she's dealing with. And, yeah, I mean, that's, Terry Moore definitely makes things pretty real.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, he, like in Strangers in Paradise, I've only read a little of it so far. But, you know, he's dealing with kind of real people, real emotions. The other thing that I've read in completion is Rachel Rising, which is a horror story. But you're still dealing with a lot of people and relationships and stuff like that. But even in Rachel Rising, where it's a horror story, so there's a lot of stuff in it that you know, doesn't really feel real. I mean, you know, witches and demons and stuff like that. And, you know, whether you believe all those things are real or not, whatever. I mean, in a horror story, like when you're reading a story like that, you're not like, oh, this is stuff that really happens. But there's so many things that happen in that book. Like, one of the most horrific things that happens in the book is something that really happens in real life. So you've read the beginning of Rachel Rising, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it starts off with her coming out of a shallow grave where she was buried face down. And it's pretty clear, even though the details aren't made clear, that she was assaulted, murdered, and buried. You don't know the extent of stuff. And at the end of the series, you find out the extent of everything and what happened. And that's the most horrific thing that happened in the series. And it's something that's real, something that really happens. And I think it's kind of the same thing in Motor Girl, where yeah, you're reading it, you get caught up in kind of the silliness and the lighthearted, and you know, you get into the story, and the story you're being told is of you know, some corrupt rich person with ulterior motives trying to purchase this land, but they don't want to sell it. You know, I mean, it's a pretty stereotypical story at a base level. You know, the rich people want to buy what's ours, but it matters more to us than money does. But it, all the context of all the other things make the core of the story not even matter. You know, I mean, right now at this point in the story, like, I'm more concerned with what's going on with Samantha, not with whether or not they fight off those rich people, you know?
Right. Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's you really are looking, I mean, seeing that she's what's slowly been revealed about, you know, the horror that's gone, that she's gone through her military experience, especially being, you know, a prisoner, and to know that she's now facing, you know, potentially life-threatening disease. Yeah, it's really, you're looking at this like, oh, how's she going to come out of this? And the rest of it, I don't want to say it falls into it insignificance, but it seems secondary in a lot of ways to that story, what's going on with her. But we also see, especially at the end of this, issue number 5, which is where we're stopping. You know, they've Walden, the guy and his people have showed up, and they've pretty much surrounded the junkyard, and are also making some sort of almost like a military encampment around that. And you can tell she's not going to stand for that, and she's going to fight them with every bit of, you know, energy and everything that she can muster. She's not going to stand for that. So you can see that that's important to her. So that makes it important to the reader, to us, I think.
Yeah. So what do you think of Larry's encounter with the aliens up in their spaceship?
That is strange. I mean, it's strange and humorous, because first of all, and I don't, you know, want to reveal too much, somebody hasn't read it, but we get the first glimpse of the aliens without their helmets on, and we kind of see their real nature, and it is not what I was expecting, of what they really look like. And it continues to be that kind of a cartoony comic strip thing. And then there's this, you know, really strange panel where you see other captives that they've had, other people that they captive, and let's just say they're doing experimentation, to say the least. So yeah, and that's all we see is like a few panels of that.
I wonder the significance of that's going to have going forward, because I kind of feel like that's not just a little throwaway scene. That there's going to be something more significant to the story from that. I'm wrong, but...
No, I would think you're right. From what little I've read with Terry Moore, and it doesn't seem to me like he's the type of person that would put any throwaways in there. I think everything he puts in here is going to tie in some way.
Yeah. Yeah, I love it. He wakes up after being captured with the blanket or whatever over him, with like mermaid fin, you know, fin place of his legs, but yeah, it's just a blanket on top of him. He wakes up, sees that, and yells, "They gave me fish legs.
Yes.
That's great. Yeah, all those the panels that showed all of his fellow captives, I had looked that over for a while, so it was quite some interesting things in there. So,
right.
Yeah. If anybody hasn't checked this book out yet, they actually So these are the first five issues, and the first trade is out already also, which is the first five issues.
Right.
It's only going to be a 10-issue series, so if anybody hasn't jumped into it, like even if you jump into it now, you're halfway through. It's not going to be a massive amount more, but not a bad time to just dive into it.
No, and it's, I think it's a good, even if, and if you've not read Terry Moore before, you know, you can easily, there's nothing in here. Yeah, some of these characters have appeared previously, but there's nothing that about it that would cause you not to jump in right here if you've never read more.
Yeah, there's no previous reading required. It's kind of like watching a Kevin Smith movie where it's like, oh yeah, that character was in this movie. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter to the story at all. Yeah, so we're halfway through. We're halfway through this this book. I believe this is one that we'll definitely get back to when it's over. And on the plus side, as opposed to Rachel Rising, where Martin and I talked about the first half of it, and then it's funny, we did that episode, and our friend Ronnie, who is also, you know, from the Nerdy Legion Network, he listened to the episode, decided to give the comic a try, pounded through the whole series so quickly that even though I was halfway through, he finished it way before I did. Yeah, I think he read it over the course of a few days. He went through it so quickly. When I finally finished it up, he was so eager about it that we did a second episode, kind of wrapping it up, going over the rest of the story, and, you know, kind of touching back, you know, tying the whole thing up. He was supposed to join us tonight, wasn't he? What happened to Ronnie?
I talked to him briefly before we recorded. He started doing some yard work today, landscaping, and he's kind of caught up in that. He was trying to get things done before dark, so.
Always excuses life. With you, Ronnie.
He really wanted to be here too. When I talked to him on Friday, he was like, you know, because he's very enamored with Moore's writing. Now, he and I have talked about Motor Girl a little bit before, and yeah, he thinks it's a stellar series as well.
Along with yeah, that. He and I have talked about it some too. I know he's gotten very hooked on Terry Moore. I don't believe he's read any of the other Terry Moore stuff yet, but there will definitely be more Terry Moore podcasts in the future of this podcast. Strangers in Paradise alone, we could go about many different ways, but we'll talk about that at least a couple episodes. And we still got Echo to hit up, which is a nice little contained story, a little bit shorter than Rachel Rising, much longer than Motor Girl. The good thing is we know that we won't be back to Motor Girl for 5 months because there's five more issues to come out. We won't hit it again until we get to the end of it.
Right.
Is there anything else that stood out to you in the first half of this run?
I think, no, we've covered, you know, everything that I wanted, that it stood out to me. I mean, we've talked about his artwork, and, like I said, you know, without saying too much, I want to be a little bit cognizant of spoilers for anybody who hasn't read it that might want to, you know, avoid some of the more interesting revelations, but, no, I think it's just a really good story, and it's, I was thinking when you were talking about Rachel Rising being a horror story, in Motor Girl, you can't put it into any kind of a genre that I see. I mean, the knee-jerk reaction might be you think, oh, aliens, science fiction. Well, no, it's not a science fiction book at all. You know, so it defies any sort of, you know, genre classification, but it's a good story. If you like good storytelling, great art, and with a you know, character driven human element to it, then, you know, I can only highly recommend this and any other of his writings based on what I've experienced.
Yeah, you know, and I think seeing, I mean, I know I like it. I'm me, so that's easy to tell why I like it. Just getting to know what you like and your taste, it doesn't surprise me that we both like it because our tastes are along the same line. But then you throw Ronnie in there liking it. And Ronnie reads a lot of comics. I mean, he has breadth in what he reads, but I mean, he does in Nerdy Legion. He does a DC podcast. He has a Marvel podcast and he even does an Aftershock podcast. And, you know, say what you will about Aftershock. You could say positive stuff, about it, but, you know, Aftershock isn't along the same lines as Terry Moore. It's not like that kind of indie, you know, running with your own idea kind of, I mean, it's these people's own ideas, you know, the creators and stuff, of course. Like, it's something kind of different, but it's more in the vein of, like, I don't know, it's hitting a little closer to what you expect from comics, I guess, just like the exciting stories. That's my take on, or, you know, my view on Aftershock. You know, they're interesting. But anyways, like, nothing about Aftershock makes me think, well, if you like Aftershock, you would like this. So seeing Ronnie just really get hooked into Terry Moore, I think says a lot about Terry Moore to me.
Yeah.
That, you know, it can appeal to so many different people. Martin loves Terry Moore. Aaron has no taste, so, you know, it probably speaks more to Terry Moore's quality that he doesn't like Terry Moore. But yeah, Motor Girl, it's, you know, part of the reason we wanted to do this is we've been reading it and we've been wanting to talk about it, but we didn't want to do it before there was enough to talk about. But we also didn't want to just wait to the end,
right?
Because, you know, a big part of the reason that we do this podcast is so people can hear about something that they may have never heard about. I mean, I just talked about how Ronnie listened to the episode we did on Rachel Rising, and it made him the biggest Rachel Rising fan. He just dove right through it, and then we did a second podcast on Rachel Rising because of how much we both loved it. So we wanted to kind of get the exposure on Motor Girl 2 while it's still running, because, of course, you know, as with any other comic, if you like something, you got to support it. So, you know, if you like this type of comic, go out there and buy the damn comic so Terry Moore can keep making these types of comics.
Yeah. And it'll keep your head from getting ripped off by Mike the Gorilla.
Yeah, I'll send it after you.
Well, I'm making an obscure joke. That's what's on the cover of the first issue. It shows Samantha and Mike, and he's holding up a sign that says, "Buy her comic or I'll rip your head off." So
it's funny. I have the Wikipedia page up, and that's, of course, the image that they have on the Wikipedia page that has almost no information on it, but it has that cover. Yeah. So, dig into some Motor Girl. We'll be back to Motor Girl in like 5 months. We'll probably dip into some other Terry Moore stuff. And if you're listening and you are a fan of Terry Moore, let us know if there's other stuff. I mean, aside from Terry Moore, because obviously he only has so big of a body of work. But let us know if there's other stuff that you've really dug that we should check out based on the fact that we like Terry Moore. And we'll take a peek at that. Yes. And see what we can do. We're always looking for new suggestions. We actually have quite a few odds and ends lined up from everybody's suggestions. Can't even remember all of them. We're still working on getting the Elf Quest the episode up.
Curb your enthusiasm on that.
Read, I don't want to read that so bad, but I know some people are very enthusiastic about it. Dennis has purchased and read the whole first omnibus. I will get my hands on it and read at least some of it. Martin's working on it. We have a couple other people that were interested, so hopefully we'll put a fun episode together around ElfQuest, which will not be my cup of tea, but that doesn't matter. I don't have to like everything, but I love getting other people on to talk about these things that they're excited and interested in, even if I'm not, because you never know when I will be. Yeah. So until next time, well, God, what the hell do we have queued up next?
We don't have anything queued up next.
Yeah. And I don't have anything queued up. I know I'm working on, so prospects in the future to start checking out. Dennis and I are going to do an episode on a book called Tyrant, which is a miniseries about dinosaurs. He sent me the 5 issues that I believe is the whole series. So I have that to read, and we'll be doing that. Hopefully we'll actually be doing ElfQuest as the next episode. Then we have that Tyrant one set up. And Jay and I will discuss what we're going to bring? I know we have a few things in the air. I just don't have my hands on any of them.
I mean, there's some obvious things. You know, we said we'll do some more Terry Moore. There will be more Love and Rockets talk somewhere down the line. And yeah, we've got several things that we're talking about.
A lot of different things in the works. I just don't think we've pinned anything down yet.
We haven't made any firm decisions.
So. Yeah. So listen to the next episode to find out what else will be coming up. So until next time, you can find me on Twitter at Who's Paul. You can tweet the podcast at CBW Podcast. You can find Jay on Twitter at Jay Forgets. You can email the podcast at cbwpodcast@gmail.com. I have literally never checked that email. I probably should check that and see if anything has happened there. So let us know if you have any other ideas of stuff we should do. I know I have gotten one book from a listener that it was just something they loved and they wanted to share with me. So I'll actually share with you, Jay, what that book is off air, and perhaps it's something that we can do in the future, because I just glanced through it and it looks pretty interesting. So until next time, read ElfQuest if you're into that type of thing, and if not, just go read some Terry Moore and feel better about yourself.
Nerdy Legion.
All right, now this is where my producer puts in some good outro music.
That doesn't really seem very punk to me.
Now I'm in Maine, far, far away from there.
Yeah, and I'm gonna rip your throat out.
I could really go off. Blasphemer.
Fingerprints on his face.
Girl, rip your head off. So.
Read everything any Californian's ever written. Valley of Central. Nobody gives a shit how anybody feels today.
Hey man, this is a crazy ass book.
What the hell is going on?
Nerdy Legion.
Secret Knowledge Society.
It's nice for selling down in Texas, but I had tacos. RJ.
Nerdy Legion.
Mike is a good editor.
Mike, the gorilla.
He has no taste and he's full of hate.
Right.
The Nerdy Legion Podcasting Network. Okay. Michael, start after this.
Even though I think he just listens to the whole thing anyways.
Nerdy Legion.
No, no, no. We're a chemical mixture that makes chaos. We're a time bomb.
I always forget what episode number we're on. I also don't really like traditional intros. I hate the welcome to blah, blah, blah. How are you doing today, co-host?
Right.
I heard that on, there was some podcast, Martin's like, oh, you got to listen to what they said. So I listened to it and they did that at the beginning. Welcome to this. How are you today, so-and-so? It's like, nobody gives a shit how anybody feels today. Just get on to the podcast. So then I told Mars, like, don't ever ask me how I feel at the beginning of a podcast again. Okay, we're on episode 12.